Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people. And their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for July 19th. We're going to have stories from Texas, Tennessee, Virginia, Florida, Georgia, and more. Also some national coverage. But first, welcome back to the state, Catherine.
Thank you very much.
And welcome, Tim.
Good evening, sir.
Yes. Well, I guess the first thing I want to do is a little different because we haven't talked about it on the show since it became the central political policy piece, and that's the issue of health care. You know, the Obama administration, like, you know, every Democratic administration for a while, has been trying to do something about health care, not just sticking with the status quo. But it's starting to kind of get a little stickier. It doesn't like it's to the point of, say, 1990. Three or four where it was with the Clinton administration. But, Catherine, what's your take on the health care battle?
Well, I haven't honestly followed it this weekend, but it's going to be really tricky to convince people that to support it because everyone thinks it's going to cost so much money. But I think that the numbers show that it's going to save a lot of money in the long term. And it's going to make for a much healthier society. But that's a hard sell, especially in these economic times. So I do think it's going to be a little bit more difficult than President Obama and the congressional leadership thought at first. But I have confidence. When Howard Dean was in town, he has a lot of confidence in it passing, too, with a public option. So I don't think we can really give up yet, but I do think it's going to be a tough battle.
Yeah, that's
one
thing.
Because of the economic side of it.
Yeah, that's one thing I do keep hearing is that it's not going to be everybody has to go into a government plan, if you will. There's going to be options, and some people can go into that. Some people can stay in private plans. So it's not like they're draconically, you know, forcing everybody into some plan they don't want to be in. So to me, that seems like it would make it an easier sale. Tim, what are you hearing?
Well, frankly, it was dealt a pretty bad body blow this week. The CBO had reported that none of the plans presently proposed in either the House and Senate would produce any significant savings at all. As a matter of fact, they would do the opposite and would cost more. So that didn't help. It prompted President Obama a couple of days ago to actually come out and make a statement. He gave, like, I don't know, an hour and 15 minutes warning to the networks that he was going to do that, and here he came out. And he's trying to rally the troops. Although it's not to the point of 94 yet, it's beginning to look that way to me. As the president's poll numbers are dropping, so is his political capital. And I'm getting to be very afraid with everything else that's going on with the economy and stuff like that, that they're not going to get anything at all done.
Well, but speaking of his poll numbers dropping, and I've looked at this, it seems to me that what's happened is, you know, strongly support, maybe even neutral, opposed, strongly opposed. Really, the oppose has moved into the strongly opposed number, and that's moved, but there really hasn't been a ton of droppage in the approval rating. That's what
I've
seen.
Well, it depends on who you're looking at. The Republicans are happily reporting the results that Scott Rasmussen is dealing out, and they're doing it on a daily basis in the blogosphere. They're following it almost religiously because Rasmussen polls likely voters.
Yeah, but that's that index number. That's that old negative index is up, and that's where you see that people, there has been movement from the opposed to the negatively opposed or strongly opposed, but that's not, that's like people that didn't vote for him that said, hey, I'll give him a little bit of a chance, and now they're like, oh, I'm Republican all the way. So it's not like he really lost any big support. Catherine, have you got a different read on that?
No, I tend to agree with you, David, but Tim probably has been looking at different polls than I have. But
yeah, I mean, if you look at the Daily Kos poll, that's Research 2000, the favorable rating 62 in the latest thing. And basically, if you look, the trend line's a little bit down, but it hadn't gone below 60. And my goodness, I mean, 60% approval rating in this divided electorate is not bad.
There's a poll of polls, of all the polls out there, Gallup, CBS, ABC, Washington Post, all of them, have him at 57%, and his disapproval rating approaching 40. His approval rating is exactly where President Bush's was at this point in his presidency. That's where he's at.
Yeah, well, I guess that's not good considering where Bush has ended up. But there were some things that, I mean, I guess, you know, 7 months into Bush's term, I probably was not as anti-Bush as I sit now because there was a lot that happened in the last 4 to 6 years.
At the same time, though, David, Clinton's was at 48, so there's good and bad in that.
Right.
Yeah, he's 10 to 14% higher depending on what you look at, so yeah.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, is this enough to get health care, you know, through in any kind of way? It just seems like there's just, you know, how far does it have to get? I mean, that movie that Michael Moore made, Sicko, I just don't think that was seen by near enough people. You know, I mean, because obviously, you know, the right likes to sell, the European medicine, the Canadian medicine, it's so awful. But then when they talk to those people, I mean, those people are by and large happy. With their system, and there were some French that they had house calls still, which are pretty unheard of in America.
Well, the thing that's interesting about it is that they always call up the British and the Canadian systems, which are not the best models out there. The French system, the Spanish system, and some of the other European systems are much better, and they are melding of a private and a public system, very much like what this healthcare bill looks like, where people have private insurance, but they also have public insurance. And really, the thing that I think that we're not doing a very good job of explaining is that it's not really a change. For those of us who are fortunate enough to have healthcare insurance through our employers, will not have to change. In fact, for the bigger employees, they're not going to permit switchovers to the public option for a time period. I'm not sure what that period is, a couple of years. But what it does is it opens up Medicare. It's basically opening up a system very similar to Medicare to all those people who are currently uninsured. And Medicare, by all evaluations, has been a big success. We have millions of the elderly who are, you know, well taken care of. I know my parents and probably your parents or grandparents have thrived under the Medicare system, and it's been going on for over 40 years. So I think, but we're not doing a good job. I don't think we're doing a very good job of selling that. That's my opinion. Everybody thinks it's going to be a big change. It's really not going to be a big change for those of us who have current care.
Yeah. I mean, I'm getting a little more experience with it in that my foster daughter, is on Medicaid because she's in the foster care system, and I just can't see any real difference as far as the care that they get. My foster child, one on private insurance and one on Medicaid. The one big thing is that on dental, my son's dentist doesn't take Medicaid, and obviously one of my daughter goes to does. And I even told my wife, I said, well, if you like the one that she's going to, let's just send them both there, since you know, that these people are more open access, if you will.
Well, you got another sticking point there with the Republicans. They're just digging their heels in on any thought of a public option with this thing. Now, I find it curious that when the Republicans passed that Medicare Part D nonsense back in 2003, they were all for introducing a private option to compete with the public option, saying it would drive prices down. Well, why won't a public option competing with a private option drive prices down? No, the Republicans, nor the insurance companies are for that at all. And so there's another part. And if there's not a public option in this thing, guys, don't think it's going to work.
If there's not a public option, there's no point in doing it.
Well, yeah,
right.
I mean, it's
there's really no
like
point in doing it.
Yeah, I mean, because they can't make more private options. That's, you know, that doesn't even, you know, define anything the government would do, if you will. So it's just something that it's just going to be interesting to watch to see if anything comes out of it. But I think an overriding point that Catherine, you made, or Tim, you made earlier, was that is if the economy, with it being in such bad shape, people may be a little more resistant to supporting stuff, and so maybe if the economy were to come back some, people might be more interested or feel safer in, you know, doing something more dramatic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, of course, the economy coming back would just be good anyway. Well, I do want to kind of preview something later in the show. At 7:40, House candidate Brooke Neibel will call in, Georgia House candidate. We have to clarify since we cover so many states in the South. But I want to do something a little different. On Game On, my show that's national on Tuesdays, we have two contributors that send in pieces, and one of them is John Brenneman of the Boston Herald, and he does the Humor Gazette. You can find his work on YouTube and CNN's iReport. He submits it, but, of course, on our show. And last week, didn't have a Game On, but John still submitted a piece. So I'm going to go ahead and play that tonight. I'm going to go ahead and play it again on Tuesday, but I kind of wanted to let the Kudzu Vine listeners hear what John has to say.
Good evening. I'm Humor Gazette News anchor man Reed Page, reporting live from our Neverman Bureau on this day 20 of the Michael Jackson Death Watch. Boosted by round-the-clock media ejaculation, Michael Jackson hit number one on the TV news charts for the third consecutive week. Now, Sister Latoya Jackson is crying murder. She offers no evidence, but media jackals are gorging on her claim like a pack of dancing zombies from Thriller. Sales of Mr. Jackson's music have soared, along with memorabilia ranging from sequin gloves and surgical masks to Michael Jackson action figures and commemorative jack-o'-lanterns. The retail blitz has provided a stimulus to the nation's ailing finances. Analysts estimate the singer's death has generated at least $1.2 trillion in jackonomic impact. Our first guest has a PYT in Jacksonian history from Jackson State University, where he is one of the nation's preeminent jackologists. Please welcome Professor Jack Michaels. Professor Michaels, how has Mr. Jackson's tragic death affected you?
Thank you, Reed. For the past 48 hours, I've been interviewed by Oprah, Regis, Geraldo, and Whoopi, Wolf Blitzer, Foss and Friends, Morning Joe, and The Daily Show. I dished dirt to Rosie, spilled my guts on Springer, and told all to Montel. Katie Couric had me on a panel with Kato Kaelin and Casey Kasem, and Ryan Seacrest asked me who I was wearing. I've been verbally abused by Bill O'Reilly, bum-rushed by Limbaugh, and called a disgrace by Nancy Grace. I've even been grilled by Bobby Flay. I bared my soul to fill the news hole on ABC. And tomorrow, you can see me on Jackotainment Tonight, Access Bollywood, and a very special edition of The Twilight Zone. I also testified before Congress supporting a blanket resolution honoring Michael as the greatest alleged pedophile of our time.
Thank you, Professor Jack Michaels. This just in, more mindless speculation about Mr. Jackson's final resting place, now believed to be in Wyoming, in a multi-million-dollar hyperbaric burial chamber in Jackson Hole. For the Humor Gazette 13 o'clock news, I'm Anchorman Reed Page.
Well, for those of you that are not familiar with John Brenneman and his alter ego, Man Reed Page, he is the master of the play on words, the pun, if you will. Well, while John, we're listening to John's humor piece, we got a caller from the 862 area code. Welcome, caller. Yes, caller.
Yes, hello. Hello.
Hi.
Yes. This is LifeLink's Video Relay Service, Interpreter 432. I have a caller on the line. He says, I'm calling from San Francisco, California.
You're on a radio show right now.
I'm calling to hear more about Michael Jackson.
Oh, okay. Well, we just happened to play John Brenneman's humor piece. He's all every week on Game On. You can also hear him on our report if you search Humor Gazette. And he's done two or three lately on Michael Jackson. Yes.
Yes, well, yes, great. Okay, well, I enjoy hearing all the stories about it.
Okay, well, thanks for calling in. You know what's kind of strange about that guy? That call actually came on before. That call came in just before I hit play. So how would you have known I was going to talk about Michael Jackson, or John was going to talk about Michael Jackson? Unusual. Well, let's go ahead and get back to our Southern politics. And the first poll, I believe, first public poll of the Tennessee governor's race came out this week. Really, it was a governor's race that I think's been, you know, kind of under the radar. Tim, what was your thoughts on that poll?
Well, first of all, in both the Democratic and Republican side, the first thing that jumps out at me is probably what you were just alluding to, and that's the fact that it's flown under the radar. On the Democratic side, undecided wins handily, and on the Republican side, undecided wins handily. I mean, on the Democratic side, the leader is former Governor McWhorter's son, with 23%, and then Zach Wamp from right up here in Chattanooga on the Republican side leads with 22%. So that race has not been getting a lot of airplay for some strange reason. And I say strange because it's going to be an open race, and there ought to be a lot of excitement up there, but apparently not.
Yeah, I tell you what, if I were a candidate, I think I'd change my name to Undecided.
Yeah.
Seemed to always do pretty well. Catherine, before I get your thoughts on this, we got a caller from the 210 area code. Caller, what you got?
This is the Boogeyman. How you doing?
Hello, Boogeyman. What you want to talk about?
San Antonio, Texas. Texas politics, right?
Texas politics. Yeah, we actually saw some new polls. What you seeing in Texas?
Well, as far as the governor's race, which I think is the next big thing coming up, right?
Yes.
You're going to have Perry Hutchinson on the Republican side, right? And
yes, she's just retaking the lead we saw in a poll that came out this week.
Who has?
Yes, she has.
Well, it's a good shot she's going to win. That's going to be one of them too, in my state, right? Because there's no real, you know, this is Texas, okay? I'm a rich Democrat, and it's like, I would highly doubt. You know, that's so racist. I'm like, you got Kiki Freeman on our side, know that. We got, they're not like real super high profile guy, you know what I'm trying to say, on the Democratic side. And then Republican side, you got Perry's been the governor, and you got Hutchinson. They're very, very, I guess, popular and well steeped in Republican here. You know, they're very popular. Well, Hutchinson is anyway. So I put my money on one of those two, as far as winning it.
Yes, I guess Perry, you know, he was in bad shape until he came out and said that Texas should secede and become their own nation again. How did the rank-and-file Texan, you know, how did they respond to that?
Depends who you are.
Depends who you are.
That got some people really excited, you know, real far-right guys, I'm sure. And I think, you know, really, he didn't have to ask it. I think he had someone put in the audience and had them ask it, you know? You know, if I say that little play they do sometimes? They asked, but he got an answer to the question. But, yeah, some people I'm sure got, like, I guess more to the right, you know? These super hardcore right guys, you know? Well, yeah, they were all up, hey, let's succeed, let's succeed.
Yeah.
Some okay, not everybody. But you know, you got other people. But then a lot of people, you got to remember, this is the time that Obama was pushing a lot of stimulus stuff on Texas, okay? And it wasn't going over too well. You know what I mean? Especially on the Republican side. So he made some, I think he did that for political reasons, because he's going to be in a real heck of a fight this time around for the governorship and with Hutchinson. So, see, I mean, when he said that, I mean, we got a lot of Republicans down here, okay? And Republicans aren't, you know, Obama's biggest fans, you know? You know what I'm saying? When your governor sticks it to him, okay, if you don't agree with him so much, okay, you know, you really, they all kind of got behind him a lot to a point, you know? But it's like, to a point where you get him excited quite a bit, if you know, but, you know, it is a political thing myself. And I'm pretty sure that whoever wins it, okay, will be one of those two there. It highly surprised me if someone on the Democrat side, you know?
Yeah, we were talking last week, Kinky Friedman's not real representative of the party. Now, one race that it is looking better for Democrats is the Senate race. The mayor of Houston, Bill White, is the candidate. What do you think the chances are in the Senate race?
God, that's going to be tough, too. Well, he's going against Cornyn, right?
Yes.
Oh, that's going to be a tough one, too.
actually, I believe that it's not Cornyn, it's the open seat.
Cornyn has actually presidential ambitions, okay, you know? To point, you know, so but that's going to be a while. You see, supposedly, rumor has it that in 2012, right, he might be one of the Republicans, at least for a while, you know, that might be taking a shot at it. But it's still a long time.
Well, that's some news to us. I hadn't heard Big Bad John's name mentioned. Well, Boogeyman, you just keep listening, and, of course, when we talk Texas politics, chime in.
There's something about Texas politics, especially the primaries, you know, the primary system, which is basically almost psychotic, because we have a convention and a primary the exact same day, at the exact same time, pretty much, which no one else had, and they count them both. Did you know that?
Well, I knew at the presidential level from the primaries that they do that.
Yeah, the presidential, but see, no other state, I don't think, does that. You know what I'm trying to say? They have them both.
Yeah.
At least on the same day. So it really, because I worked them down here on that day, and it gets kind of, sure. I mean, I just kind of stumbled across your show and figured I'd call in if you're talking about the South.
Well, anytime we talk about Texas, Boogeyman, keep listening and chime in. But thanks again for calling.
So I'll give you guys an update, I guess, what's going on. But yeah, Cornyn had ambitions, okay? You know, at least, when 2012 shows around, okay? And there's no real front runner, okay, let's see, which there might be, but Palin would have said, but what goes on then still, but, you know, you never know, you know what I'm just saying? there had been some visions that I heard.
Glad you told us about that with Cornyn, because we did not know that about him wanting to run for president. But thanks again, Boogeyman, for calling, and keep listening. That kind of brought us into some Texas talk earlier, but of course when callers want to talk about something, it's good to move to that. Catherine, were you surprised that that race switched from Hutchinson? Actually, it was, I believe, last week we had Perry leading again and Hutchinson down, and then this week a different poll showed Hutchinson back on top.
Well, I think they're both, you know, from the Republican standpoint, they're probably both really good candidates, and it probably depends on who gets the most media attention in any given week. You know, if Hutchinson's out there, you know, talking up a storm, then maybe her poll numbers go up, and then Perry goes out and does something, and his poll numbers go up. You know, I think that's sort of what happens in these primary periods where you've got two, you know, because they both have good name recognition. So, you know, I think it's not surprising to me. The Democratic side is surprising. Like, I can't believe there's not some good, solid, respectable, recognizable Democrat in Texas, but I guess they all left between 2000 and 2008.
but I tell you, I think really if it's going to be this, if it's just a hardcore Republican vote, I think Brick Perry's got a decent chance, but if it opens up and it's more of your independent voters that may lean more Republican, then that's where Hutchinson will be helped. Also, if it looks like Bill White's going to take the Senate and it's just nobody good in the gubernatorial race, then Democrats may kind of switch over, since they're maybe of the opinion of Boogeyman and say, look, we don't have a good shot at this thing. And they go ahead and vote and say, look, we'd rather have Hutchinson as our governor because she's a little more sound, middle of the road, and we haven't gotten tired of her after what will be 10 years at that point. Tim, what do you think about Texas?
Well, what was happening with this switching back and forth, very early this year, Senator Hutchinson was beating up on Governor Perry pretty good in the polls. Then the Tea Parties came, and of course he attended two of them and said what he said about secession, and he threw a little raw meat out there while she stayed silent and also was happy to do her job up in the Senate, which people didn't care for what was going on up there on the Republican side. So his poll numbers increased and hers decreased. Well, all of a sudden, last week, she announced that, yes, I am going to run against Governor Perry. What happens? She gets a bounce in the polls. The bottom line is, a little bit like Tennessee, even though these two people have high name recognition, the voters really aren't tuned to this race yet, and it's going to go back and forth like that, I think, for a time until early next year when it starts shaking out.
Yeah, and it, being the March primary date, that is going to compress it to where they can get in front of the cycle. Just be interesting to watch. But I just have a gut feeling that Hutchinson's going to win that primary because, 10 years is a long time for anybody to be in office.
I wish she would win it because she couldn't be a worse governor than he is.
Yeah, I mean, I guess he'd have to go find his soulmate or something. Like our friend Mark Camford to be worse, but
that was good.
That's where we're at. But then we were talking about Tennessee and how that race is just no attention. And then Ned McWhirter, I think he does have some name ID. Actually, that's the son of Ned McWhirter,
right.
That's one of the legends of Tennessee politics. This is a guy that I guess served as Speaker of the House for a time period about as long as Tom Murphy here in Georgia, not quite as long, but, then his son was able to capitalize on that and kind of guess that bringing back that Southern dynasty politics, and I guess not only the South. I mean, you have that out in California with the Browns. You have it up in Massachusetts with the Kennedys. But, this fellow, if he becomes governor, this will, I guess leave the stamp as one of the great families of Tennessee politics with the Gores. And is there another one up there that I'm forgetting, Catherine or Tim?
I can't think of them.
Yeah. So, and I guess that may be the only father-son combo in state-elected history in Tennessee. So, it's going to be an interesting race to watch. And maybe we can find us a Tennessee, insider, if you will, to come on and talk to us about Tennessee politics and inform us, because to me that's an interesting state. And it's one of those kind of states you think it's more swing state-ish in that, Harold Ford came so close to winning 4 years ago, and then this past year it was one of the, three states along with Arkansas and Oklahoma that got more Republican. Or actually, did Louisiana fit in that bill? It may have been four states, but it's kind of a hard state to tell. It has Phil Bredesen, a Democratic governor, but then I think some of the Raiders have said, hey, this state leans Republican, for taking over the gubernatorial race. It will be interesting to see. And one interesting thing is a lot of places people don't go from Congress to governor's mansion, but Zach Womp's trying to follow in the footsteps, I guess, of Bob Riley, the governor of Alabama, but that's one of the few places I've seen that done. I guess Nathan Deal's trying to do that in Georgia, and it looks like Zach Womp's got a much better shot there than here. Catherine, what do you think about that kind of move?
I think it's kind of a smart thing to try to do if you have, political aspirations. if you, you know, if you can get some name recognition in Congress and then come back to your home state and run for governor. Isn't that what Evan Bayh did?
I thought Evan Bayh was moved up to state politics, and then he moved over to the governor's race.
Oh, okay.
He has been elected to a lot of offices, and he's a legacy, if you will. His
That's right, yeah.
Father was senator, so
yeah.
He does fit in that. I will say this, Tennessee's a tricky state in that a lot of states you have one main population center, but in Tennessee you've got four population centers with four separate media markets. So it's a very tricky state to try to do your media in and get known in, although it is a little easier to travel because the layout of it.
Yeah.
Kim?
Yeah, well, Zach, on both sides of the thing, obviously McWhorter has working for him the name, and it may propel him to the nomination. Over on the other side, to me, is a much more interesting race. Zach Wamp, I've watched his career with interest since he replaced Marilyn Lloyd in Congress up here in Chattanooga. He is kind of a moderate Republican. Sometimes he'll fool you and vote with the Democrats on some things. So he's not a hardcore right kind of guy. He's also, if I'm not mistaken, Chattanooga is actually the second largest city and metro area in the state of Tennessee now, bigger than Nashville, bigger than Knoxville.
The tricky part of that, though, Tim, is metro Chattanooga probably is bigger than some of those others, but part of metro Chattanooga resides in Georgia. Because south end of metro Chattanooga is across the state line.
They have an excellent TV market there, though, so, you know, media stuff will help him out. And I think he'll also play well in East Tennessee. So I think he's a favorite there.
Yeah, because East Tennessee is more of the Republican base traditionally. I mean, that goes way back because you have part of East Tennessee. They're 1860s Republicans because those folks didn't even want to succeed
right.
to the Union because they were like, we don't have slaves. We don't want to go to war. So they became Republicans way back. That's where Bill Brock, I guess, had his base of operations when he defeated Albert
Gordon. That's also where Lamar Alexander's from. The Eastern Republicans up there, and I go up there a lot to East Tennessee. It's where I vacation practically. I go. Those people are economic Republicans. A guy like Zach Wamp is really going to appeal to him. So I think he's going to be hard to beat. If he's got the money, and he should. He should have a good war chest because he's a long-term congressman. He's been in the Congress for a pretty good while now, so he ought to have some money, too.
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned Marilyn Lloyd, one of my favorite longtime Tennessee Democrats, in that she was a shorter college Democrat. And Tim, you probably know you can count that in a small group. And, of course, myself and Scott Aiken are two of them. But Marilyn Lloyd, shorter college graduate and a Democrat. So I always liked her. Well, it's Tennessee. It's going to be a race we have to watch. Now, you said something about a good war chest and raising money. Talking about raising money, we alluded to the fact that Eric Johnson had raised a lot of money in Georgia. But my question is, what's he going to do with all that money, or what has he done with all that money this far? Catherine, what do you think?
I don't know. I haven't really seen him. You know, you don't see him a lot about him. Of course, I don't follow the Republicans very closely, but it doesn't seem like he's spending very much money, does it?
Yeah, I mean, if you look, some of the consultants, I mean, he doesn't seem to have signed up any big-name consultants. It seems like, you know, hey, guys, I've got $1 million to spend. You know, obviously consultants, they need to know that the checks will actually cash. So you would think that, you know, that he would make a little more inroads. I mean, because to me, I always like to say, hey, keep your burn rate low. But you do need to spend some kind of money and do certain things that are kind of things that are like planting. You have to plant the trees so they'll grow and provide the shade down the road and those kind of activities. Now, of course, you know, like none of the three of us are going to the kind of activities that would be low-level stuff. But even on the blogosphere, you can read on Peach Pundit and kind of tell what the other side's doing, and you see the videos they make. Because, of course, you know, a video like Karen Handel did, that may take $5,000 to produce. The real money comes in was when you put it on air. So, I mean, he just doesn't seem to be doing any of those kind of things unless he's got a strategy that is unseen to everybody at this point. Tim?
Well, it's not just that, David. I was wondering, you know, he's the Senate Majority Leader. That's a very powerful position. He's obviously built up a lot of markers in the state legislature over the years. That should translate into some real help in various counties around the state, but I just don't see a charge toward Eric Johnson. Why isn't he using that base, that natural base that he has in the state Senate that none of the other candidates would have? And he's just not out there. It's almost like people don't know the guy's running.
Is kind of primary in which you're going to have to make your mark soon.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
There are big names, and they don't, and they have some money too. And you know, if people line up behind Oxendine, Handel, and Deal, because I see those as the top three right now, there's going to be nowhere for him to go.
Why would he leave such a powerful position in the state Senate to take a chance on something like this if he's not going to toss all of his marbles into the ring?
And not only that, he not only left, the state Senate, he left the lieutenant governor's race because, if I'm not mistaken, he was originally in that race, and he only jumped in when Casey Cagle jumped out of the governor's race. And so almost you'd think, well, if the rate he's going, he might be better off going back to the lieutenant governor's race, since Casey Cagle seems to be a little unpopular in some Republican circles.
It just seems like Eric Johnson's name is out there that he's running, and that's all about Eric Johnson that is out there. We alluded to the money. Well, he raised $962,000. I'm not seeing where he's spending any of it.
Yeah, that's the vexing thing, because if he was out there running, he had a record, but he had raised $100,000, you go, well, there's nothing to do anything with. There's no ammo, no arsenal, but he does have that, so you would think he would try to use it. At some point, I mean, obviously can't use much of it, but even in kind of low-level kind of things that we would see, $50,000 would be able to impact even us on the Democratic side where we saw what he was doing. So it'll be interesting to see, and watch. It's one of those things we'll have to keep track of. There was some more polling. Actually, before we get to the polling, one of the other stories that really intrigued me that caught my eye was that Marco Rubio, who we've been talking about for some time, he was, he's looking to challenge Charlie Crist for the Republican nomination for Senate. And I think in some ways getting some headway, particularly among very conservative voters, he may actually switch to the Attorney General's race, which would be a vacant seat since Bill McCollum's going to run for governor, the current Attorney General. I was really surprised by that. Catherine, were you?
Yes, I was, because that seemed like, the matchup. But maybe they think Crist is really just too strong.
Yeah, I was thinking that, Crist would be strong to beat if the vote was very, moderate, middle-of-the-road voters, but I think the Republican primary is more conservative than that state as a whole. So I thought that, he had a good chance. But if he abandons this, that's definitely going to give Crist a clean shot at the nomination to where he can run to the middle. It's going to make it a very hard race for Democrats to win at that point.
Well, that might be a Democratic leadership issue where they said, we can't, even though we think Rubio might be able to win the primary, we can't really have him running because then we'll get a Democratic challenger that will be harder to beat. You see what I mean?
Maybe they offered to say, hey, look, we'll give you full backing in the Attorney General's race. So we can win this. But it'll be interesting to see if then another conservative takes his place. I think we've got Brooke Niebel on the line. Welcome, Brooke.
Yeah, hi, how are you doing, Dick?
Hey, welcome back to the show. Brooke, you had some exciting news the other day, I think, for the scene, and then, of course, we got you in on the kudzu vine to say that you're going to run for state house. Tell us about, you know, where that district is and what's going on.
Well, yes, I am going to be running for state house rep in Georgia. It's District 51, which covers a majority of Gwinnett County. It's the Peachtree Corners area of Gwinnett County. Also, I do have some voters in the North Fulton District as well, which is right over the Chattahoochee River, the border between that and that, like I said, that upper area, which is called Johns Creek. And then I do have a precinct over in DeKalb as well. About 28,000 voters.
Yeah. So it sounds like the DeKalb portion, that might be a little more Democratic, the Fulton portion being more Republican, and that Gwinnett portion may be one of those changing areas of Gwinnett. Is that a decent read on that?
That's exactly correct. The Gwinnett portion of that district is changing quickly as we speak. There's a lot of voters over in my district, which I've been living in this district for going on 16 years. They're telling me, and I'm talking to them every day, and they're telling me, you know, we don't know what we are right this moment. We're upset with what's currently going on in our government, and we don't want to be a part of it on a particular issue aside. What we are is we are our own people. We have our own thought, and we're looking to make that decision. You know, which way we go is how we're going to make our decision in this next election. And so that's it's good to hear, because obviously I wasn't hearing this 6 months ago, but given the current situations in the economy and what's happening to my neighbors around me, they are looking to voice their opinion with the power of their vote next year. So, again, it looks good for myself, and that's what I want to do. I want to be able to represent the people, not the ideals of a certain group of people, I believe, are being represented in our state house.
Yes. Now, Brooke, you're no stranger to the show, but in the past you've been on helping other candidates and helping charities, and that's great. But since some people may not know exactly about your background, tell the folks what they need to know.
Well, again, background is I was up until last year a citizen of Gwinnett County and also a mom, and I guess what the others would like to say to me, an activist. I don't know much of an activist, but like I said, if an activist means being concerned about the issues that we all have to face, I guess you can call me that. I've been heavily involved in community activities here when it comes to what we need in this community, which is, attention and a job and plenty to be taken care of right now. So I'm very involved with that. And again, I had my own business. I ran my own type of business where I was out there talking to everyday homeowners. I was doing more of the home improvement sector, but and I was marketing my services out there for that. But the main where I decided to get involved in politics was last year, of course, with the Barack Obama campaign. Again, Barack Obama, I see him as a very visionary. No matter what anyone says now, he needed to come into power now, because we need somebody like him, and he's a great leader, and he is on the path to trying to, like I said, change this country for the better, which is to provide new jobs and provide opportunities for people right now that need it. So, again, I've been extremely excited about the fact that we have changed now in Washington, and that we will change Georgia for the better eventually, very soon here, and that's why I decided to do what I'm doing.
Yeah, that kind of segues into why you decided to run. You've kind of told us why you wanted to seek office. Why this race, Georgia House?
Why this race now? Because it's important. We are on the crust of changing in this district and in Georgia. And everybody says to me, you know, I'm not political. But if you have an opinion and you have the idea that you want to voice an opinion and you're concerned about the issues, then I say do something about it. Don't stay on the sidelines. And I believe that this is the time. With record unemployment in this state going close to 10% at this point and rising even higher, and the fact that we are losing jobs every day, again, for Georgia. And so I want to help my neighbors. Family, I want to help out people who are looking for an opportunity but they can't find it. And I have that. I see that opportunity. I look for where it goes. I'm very involved with the green community right now. They are looking, jobs are, green jobs are looking to come. I mean, people have anything that has to do with green, they're looking to relocate to Georgia. They are going to provide new jobs for this area and for the state. If we allow them, we give them the incentive to come here. And I've been talking with those companies, and they have jobs that they can bring in, and that's going to be new growth and a new economy. And so I want to do it. I want to get on the next.
Yeah. Well, I'm not the only one on this show. Also, Tim Shiflett, Catherine Smith are both on here with me. I'm going to let Tim go ahead and ask a question or two. Tim?
Yes, ma'am. I've noticed that you have mentioned...
We lost her. I'm looking on the switchboard, so we'll kind of hold up, and you hold your question until
okay.
we get Brooke back. I guess, you know, that the cell phone range, when you're in cell phone range, Blog Talk Radio gets you in pretty good, but then, of course, when whoever your carrier is doesn't get you there, we can't do much about that. I guess until then, we can kind of pull one of our topics out of the grab bag, if you will. We were talking about Rubio. In fact, Tim, did you get a chance to talk on Rubio? I'll go ahead and let you – well, there comes Brooke back. Fast-paced show here. If we had a call screener. Brooke, I'm going to let Tim Shiflett ask you a question or two.
Sure.
Yes, ma'am. I noticed you had mentioned on your website the importance of transportation. Now, two questions I want to ask. Number one, is transportation the number one issue for you? And number two, what is your opinion of high-speed rail service?
I believe, yes, transportation is one of my number one issues. And as far as high-speed rail service, I believe that we need it 100% right now. I don't know if you know, I'm originally from Chattanooga, Tennessee. I know you were talking about Tennessee earlier. And I believe that we're merging that border of Tennessee and with Georgia, and we need a high-speed rail that can provide transportation between the two cities. That will, I believe, the top the cities that are hurting the most right now in North Georgia are, I believe, the Dalton area, the Ringgold area. Those are they're receiving, you know, no job assistance. I mean, they're losing jobs by the, you know, every day. And if we offer a high-speed rail service, which offers stops in between that corridor, that can provide new jobs, and the transportation there can improve immensely. So,
one more question about transportation. It's pretty obvious that the road system in the Atlanta area needs to be dealt with. Do you think this should be done at the state level, or would you prefer the federal government step into this?
There are some avenues where I believe that the federal government definitely needs to stand it, you know, get involved. On the state level, I mean, you know, I mean, I'm hearing that there are some problems on the state level when it comes to that, and there's always been some, and that also has been some, I'm sure I've heard this partisan wrangling that's going on in the state house, where, you know, where do we put the funds and the money in for those projects? But I mean, we need to improve the roads and the transportation system as it is. We need in order to move to, like I said, to that next level, that future of being able to move, you know, to bringing in new jobs and bringing in new technology, we're going to have to improve our technology when it comes to the road system here in Georgia. And I guess, you know, like I said, whichever the way is more efficient, but as far as where that money or who's involved in that, it just depends on the plan and the project.
Okay, thank you, ma'am. Catherine?
Hello, Brooke. My name's Catherine Smith. I'm in Atlanta. Thank you for joining us this evening. I've been looking at your website, and first I want to congratulate you for stepping up and being willing to serve. I think it's a great thing, and I think more people like you who are, you know, community activists should, you know, recognize that they have a lot to contribute. I did have one question. I looked through your website, and I don't see any party affiliation at all. And I'm just wondering, are you running as a Democrat, as an independent, as a Republican? What, you know, I'm just wondering.
Okay, Catherine, I'm glad you asked that question. And,
I didn't know you answered that question.
Yes, no, I said I'm glad you asked that question.
Oh.
I obviously everyone knows who has looked up my past that I was extremely involved with the Democratic Party. And then, of course, you know, my district encumbers right now, based on, you know, information from the last election, that it is a heavily Republican district, but it is a changing district. But like as I said earlier in the conversation, there are a lot of people that are getting disingenuous about the whole system as we speak. I mean, they don't know where to turn because they haven't gotten a lot of answers from both parties. However, my views and my how I feel are more towards a Democratic position. And also, I see that there might eventually be a third party in this state that becomes stronger in the sense of – because I think – There are voters out there that want an option. However, at this point, I want to run as a Democrat. I want to change Georgia to blue. But in the same sense of it, I want to bring in the voters who are getting disingenuous with the parties. Those are the people, like I said, that I talk to every day, and I want to be able to answer. I want to be representative of everyone in my district. Whether they be a Republican or Democrat or independent, because I feel that we need people in the state house that represent an entire community, and that community has differing opinions, but we're all going through the same issues right now. And so what we have to have is people who represent and can stand up and lead and find and be that person, that vocal, that voice in the House and the Senate. And what I want to be is that voice. And I just don't – party labels to me right now, even though I do think it's very important we have them, I really want to make sure that people understand that I'm going to represent them, wherever their views are. I want them to vote for me, but I want them to vote for me as the candidate, the person that's going to be able to stand up and speak for their interest in the state house. But I will be running, when I run, and it's probably going to be a Democrat, I still want them to vote for me, not by that party label. So, again, I'm looking for supporters. And I'm looking for people who are willing to listen to what I have to say and be able to know that I will represent them accordingly, and I won't be doing it for a special interest or for a political gain. I will be there to represent them, the people of my district.
Okay. So you haven't really decided what party you're going to be running in.
I have made my formal announcement with the Democratic Party that I am running. But I want the voters to know me, the candidate, and know what I am about. I'm doing this a little bit more unconventionally than probably some of my other fellow representatives that are going out and running for the first time, people running candidates. Again, it's the idea, and I'm taking this from the Obama queue, is that, I'm going to be doing grassroots campaigning, and I'm going to be talking to every single voter out there, and I'm going to be listening to what they have to say, and I'm going to be taking down that information and utilizing that to make sure that I run the most effective campaign that I can run. And my opponent right now, just so you know, and I think if everybody does, we'll get to know, does not care if he connects with Republicans. I mean, he's a Republican, so he's going to connect more with Republicans. But what I will say is I'm going to connect with those Republicans. I'm going to listen to what they have to say, and I'm going to take their opinions as well. But my main thing is right now is that as a state and as a district that I'm representing, I'm going to be representing every single voter out there and their interest and what they need right now for this district. And
well,
so
I think that's great, and I wish you all the best luck. And how are things going?
I'm putting together the campaign as we speak. I'm 15 months out from this election, and I plan on using every bit of these 15 months to go out there and meet the public and to answer and to listen to their questions. I'm having a meet and greet August 6th here in the district, and I'm going to be talking these very same things that I'm telling you. I'm going to make sure that they understand that I am going to be representing them if they elect me in there on November 2nd, 2010. That I will go to work the next day to work for their interest and support them, and that's what you're supposed to be doing, I think, as a representative or as any elected official right now, is representing the interest of the people that you're supposed to represent. And so that's what I'm doing every day right now, is hearing that and taking it down and listening, because That's the kind of person I am. I really do care what happens to these people, and I wouldn't be doing this just to do it. I'd be doing it to make a change.
we know how hard that work is, and we like I said, we really admire it, and thank you very much.
Okay.
Well, Brooke, I was looking at your site as well, and I noticed that you were apparently involved in something called the White House Project. Tell us what that is and what you got out of it.
I thought it was probably one of the best experiences I could actually have running as a candidate. The project, the White House Project, is a project run out of the New York area of a woman that started it, and Marie Wilson, and started, I think it was about, she said, 13 years ago. And we have a representative here in Atlanta who put together the southern part of it, of this project. Basically, we had a weekend juncture at Agnes Scott College about 2 weeks ago with about 180 women representing all facets of whatever office they want to run for, anywhere from the county level to the, well, some people actually got up and said they want to run for president at some point. And these were women that came from all backgrounds, all walks of life. All I can tell you is we've got some very motivated women, women who want to step up to the plate and take on a role in our government. And they want to represent the same way I do, and that's representing the people or for whatever district or whatever area of government they want to run in. And I'm extremely impressed by these women. Some are already in office, and we did have that day where those people were talking, including the mayor of Atlanta. It's a great thing to know that I'm not in this by myself, and that the support that I get mainly will come from women like them, because they understand what it's like to actually do something like this and to try to achieve almost an insurmountable idea of getting to that point of getting elected. And so I truly, truly support every single one of them and their endeavors, whichever way they go. And I hope that one of them does turn out to become president, because there was presidential material in that room. So we might be seeing our next president somewhere down the road from Georgia. And it was a very exciting weekend.
Okay. Well, Brooks, I want to thank you for coming on. And before you leave, though, if people want to help your campaign, how can they do that?
Sure. I have a website, and it is www.voteforbrooke.com. And, I love to hear, I've got a town hall forum part on my website where they can just go in and, you know, tell any of the issues they feel strongly about, they can voice it back to me. That's what I'm all about. Is hearing from the public. And the other part of it is that there will be an interactive part, because I'm getting connected, plugged in, and tuned on, I guess, as to what's happening in the world of social networking and the idea of technology. So I'm going to be plugged in, is what you say. And then, of course, if anybody else wants to find out about the current events that I'll be either having or attending, just go on there and you'll see that. And I would appreciate anyone's support at this point. It's a long road, but I plan on getting there one step at a time.
Okay. Well, thanks for coming on, and good luck.
Yes, thanks.
Yes. Well, Tim and Catherine, we've just got a few minutes left. I had a lot of callers tonight. I believe we had two callers during the show, which, excluding Brooke, our guest, so it may be a new record for us. Usually we get one here and there. So, I guess certainly guy from Texas, that was a good call, and then the other person just, I guess, tapped into anything Michael Jackson. But, of course, come back next week. We'll have more Southern Talk. On Game On, Desmond and I are going to be doing Political Big Brother, so on Tuesday, 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. If you want to hear what Political Big Brother is, you'll have to tune in for more. But until next week, it's been Game On. I'm sorry, Ted Devine.
Hey, wrong guys.
Show. Good night.
Good night.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense.